Hi there, and welcome to Victory Labs, part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway. I'm Dylan Langell, and I'm on the nice list this year. Thank you very much for listening, and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you and your family. We are less than a week away from Christmas Day. Santa is getting ready to strap into his sleigh and drop off presents to kids all around the world, and I'm sure a few IWK 250 tickets will be appearing in stockings next week. I'll have some details coming up in a few about camping renewals for the IWK 250 weekend, but what a year 2019 was. This year we celebrated 50 years of racing history at Riverside, headlined by four major events, and Donald Chisholm competed in all major events, the three Pro Stock Tour races and the Lone Pinty Series race. He joins me now to chat about his year at the track his father built in 1969 and how the Chisholm racing legacy is continuing with his daughter Emily. Well, it's great to have the owner of Riverside Speedway back on Victory Laps. It's Donald Chisholm back here. He was on earlier this year. Donald, how's it going?
Things are pretty good. Thanks for having me back on.
And we're all done racing. It's kind of that in between now. I mean, we got Christmas coming up, but the race fans and all of us here are just waiting for 2020.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty busy 2019 for sure, certainly from the track perspective. And yeah, we're in the quiet time now. Snowball Derby can just pass, so it'll be pretty much race-free, I think, until Daytona in February.
What a year we had celebrating 50 years of racing at Riverside, and you participated in all four marquee events, and you had pretty good results in every single race that you ran in, starting off with the Triple 50s back in June, which kind of led on this throwback theme when we started this back in January. Different format. How'd you feel about it, and how was it driving in that race?
You know, it was, I think the whole theme for this year was to try and sort of celebrate the 50th, you know, anniversary of the track. So, the Triple 50s was an idea that Joan suggested and, you know, we talked about and eventually did. So modified it a little bit to try and not impact, you know, the big season points picture too much. But I think it was a neat way to kick off the 50th year and real play on the 50th year being it was the Triple 50. So you know, from a track perspective, it was a real neat way to just, you know, spend some time celebrating the milestone that 50 years is. From a racing perspective, it was, you know, we had an okay car, but we actually had engine trouble that day. We stuck a valve, I think it was in the first 50 lap segment or the second, so I think we ended up 21st. So it was one of the first races we had run with our new car, and looked like it was going to be a pretty good day for us, but the mechanical woes kind of caught up with us early on that one.
Things were a bit better come July at the IWK 250. You sat on the pole. You were up front for all the day, got a top five with Cassius Clark winning. And that race as well, that's when you brought out the special paint scheme to honor your father, that number 88 styled after the Holman Moody Ford. We were blessed with great weather. I mean, it was just a great weekend overall, right?
Yeah, no, the weather was absolutely perfect, which was nice to see. We got a good forecast all week, and the week turned out to be nice, so it was good. Rain really puts a damper on any event, and it's tough on that one. Just tough event to reschedule, and when weather affects it, it's not near as fun. The paint scheme was absolutely awesome. Had a lot of compliments on it, and a lot of people, you know, that would have watched Dad race back years ago sort of come up and say it reminded them a lot of that particular car. So, you know, I noticed some of the younger fans maybe didn't quite get it as much as some of the older fans who would have actually seen the original car of Dad's race at the track. So, you know, we had a good run at the 250, ended up fourth, you know, led early. Just, again, we had a good car that day. We had no mechanical issues, which was nice. Just still, again, it was early on with that car. So it was a good night, but we would have certainly liked to finish a few spots closer to the front. But Cassius was certainly on rails that night, and he was going to be tough to beat.
Kind of going back to your car that you had, was it difficult to make it look almost identical to what your father ran?
Not too much work on my part. Peter Lawrence at Point Design does all of our graphic work. So he, I had a picture of the car and I sent it to him, and he pretty much replicated it right down to the size and the scale of the decals, and actually was able to get some directly from Holman Moody. So they were obviously not the sticker or decal that was on the car back in the day, but sort of a factory representative of it. So, you know, Peter did a great job, and I think it was fairly nostalgic for a lot of people to see it again.
So now we kind of hopscotch to August, and then you switched series. You ran in the NASCAR Pinty Series Bumper to Bumper 300. You sat on the pole again, and you were up front for almost the entire race, and I still say that was the craziest race I've ever seen in person, especially at Riverside, with how many lead changes there were towards the end. And you got yourself a little tangled up in some corner business in turn 3 and 4. That was just a wacky and wild race.
Yeah, that event typically doesn't have a lot of caution, so there was more than we normally see in this year's Pinty's event. Car was good again. Last year, qualifying rained out. I think we had a shot at the pole last year in 18, but didn't get the chance to show it. So we did this year, and we were quickest or second quickest most all day in practice, and then lucky enough to hang on for the pole. So again, we had a great car. It did get a little bit loose on me as the race went on, and on our second set of tires, it just got a little bit freer again. So good car, just with all those cautions late in the race, it was sort of hard to get going. Would have been one of those races with fewer cautions, I think, would have been more helpful for us, and might have prevented some of the later race shenanigans that we get caught up in. So, you know, we ended up ninth, which is, you know, a respectable finish with those guys, but certainly, you know, a little disappointed we didn't finish better. I thought we were capable early on of a top five, and, you know, if everything goes really well, maybe a shot at the win. But again, those guys, they're tough to beat. That's their series. They do it every week, 12, 13 times a year. So, you know, just to be able to compete with them is cool. And, you know, this year things stayed together a little bit better mechanically for us. And in 18, we had a tough start to the race. We lost an axle, and it just got us down early. So nice to get through one without any real issues. But man, it's hard to get a perfect race when it all comes together just the way you like it.
Then after that, we moved on to the Lucas Oil 150 in September, but a rare delay. I don't ever remember a hurricane delay for a race in a long time. Old Hurricane Dorian decided to stop in that weekend instead of us racing, but we eventually got it in, and you got yourself another solid top 10, and it made the points battle really tight with the Pro Stock Tour.
Yeah, other than it was a little delayed from originally scheduled, it was another good event. And Cole Butcher won that.
Yep.
Again, he seemed to be the guy to beat that particular race. So, again, decent car, just not good enough. We just got to get our car to roll the center of the corner a little better and not give up anything coming off. So, you know, some of that's part of the issue with only running a partial schedule. You get less opportunities to figure the car out, and it just, you know, anytime you're not doing something full time, it probably makes you a little less competitive. But good event, and the fireworks at the end of the race were a lot of fun. So you know, it's just kind of a neat way to cap off the 50th anniversary season.
So with you racing in the Pro Stock Tour, what does 2020 look like? Are you going to be kind of sticking with the Nova Scotia events again?
Probably. I think right now that's a safe bet. Obviously, my daughter Emily, she's been racing the last couple of years. So, you know, she goes most Friday nights to Scotia Speed World. So it's just been a lot to keep her going 12 or 13 times. And I guess we probably race 7 or 8 times. So that's... you know, I'd like to still do more, but with all the commitments at work and home and kids and obviously Emily racing, it just it makes for a busy summer. So we're going to do what we can do, and hopefully we'll build on the results we had last year and run a little stronger again.
All right, well, let's jump forward there. Emily just didn't race at Scotia Speed World. She won the Bandolero Beginner Championship there. She had a tremendous year with 5 feature wins and then the championship to cap it all off. I mean, what a run for her, right?
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable, actually, just to watch her improvement from last year, her first year, to this year. And, you know, you could see a steady improvement most every week. It was the odd tough night, like all racing. You got to take the bad with the good. But she really did a good job. And I could notice she kind of got things figured out about halfway through the season. So just real proud of her and excited that she was able to hang on. She led the points about midway through the year and then had 2 tough back-to-back weekends, which kind of put her in a hole. But she was tough. She didn't get down on it, and she went out and won the next 3 races and ended up with the championship. So it was a lot of fun, and that's been a lot of fun watching her race and get faster every week. So obviously she's going to be bumped up to another division, same car, but another division next year, still in the Bandoleros. But she'll just be with the older, kind of more experienced kids, and it'll be a tougher deal for her, I'm sure. But I'm sure after a few weeks she'll catch right on.
Would that have been the cherry on top with the 50th anniversary with Emily winning a championship?
Well, for sure, especially, you know, when you go into the year not knowing how things are going to stack up or where they'll stack up. But you know, for her to win a championship in the same year as Riverside's 50th, you know, it is pretty special. And you know, I often think if my dad was around, he'd have been pretty proud to see the whole show, for sure. So you know, we never went into the year or talked a whole lot about points or the championship. Those, I find it almost distracting, and you start to pay attention a little bit to the wrong things. So I just tried to tell her every week is a new week, and you got to go out and finish as well as you can. And you know, some nights finishing third is better than pushing it and wrecking, trying to get the win. So she drove pretty smart all year, and just real cool to see that steady improvement as the year went on.
In a few words, can you describe the 50th anniversary of Riverside and this year in total, with every event we had, including the show and shine we had at the Pinty's race, and then the Sportsman Series? Every race was a close, tight finish, tight points battle. How can you describe this season?
Just a real, you know, special season, I guess. And obviously, I want to thank you for everything you've done, and Joan and Peter for everything they've done, and Paul. Just makes a real team effort, obviously, to pull those things off. So, you know, it was just a way to try to celebrate the track and, you know, maybe reward the fans with a little bit of something extra or different at every event. So just trying to make the most of a milestone. You know, I don't know if I'll be around to see the 100th anniversary, maybe the 75th. So we'll have another show at the 75th anniversary.
Well, what can we expect in 2020? We already know the IWK 250 Super Race weekend is July 16th through the 18th. What else is kind of on the horizon that we can maybe expect here?
A few things still up in the air just as of yet. 250 obviously has been announced. It's that same, about the third weekend in July. So I suspect you'll see the 2 other Pro Stock Tour races there with some sportsman support stuff. We'll keep working away and keep you posted on any details that come up.
And whatever's going to be happening, we're looking forward to 2020. And congratulations on everything you did in 2019. And we look forward to the next year as well.
No, it sounds good. And thank you again for everything you guys did all year. And the podcasts are awesome, every one of them. And thanks to all the fans for coming out and supporting the racetrack on a pretty big year.
Victory Labs started back in January to kick off the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside, and over the course of the year, I've had the pleasure of chatting with many maritime racing heroes. Here's our highlight reel featuring Frank Fraser, Bobby Allen, George Koskulik, Jim Hallahan, Rolly McDonald, Greg Stewart, Junior Hanley, Kent Vincent, Sean Turple, the defending IWK 250 winner Cassius Clark, and NASCAR legend Kenny Wallace. Now, in 1987, that's when you win the 250 race again. Do you have any memories of that race, the 1987 race?
It's usually 250s are go, you know, pretty, they're kind of usually flow along. You usually have a flow to them, and a lot of times, because they're so long, you don't remember. I remember more of the 250 when Scott was running there, and he had won a whole bunch of them in a row, and I was running at the time, and it was a 250, and I caught him and was just about to go by him, and I dropped the cylinder in the motor, and I ended up still then running second. But I remember that more than any, because I said I spent 100 laps trying to catch the little bugger, and just at the time I caught him and drove up underneath him to go by, I dropped the cylinder. That's the one I remember more than anything.
Oh, and I was actually going to jump ahead of that. So Scott had Riverside down. He won 5 250 races in a row. As a competitor and a dad, you're racing against your son. Like, how do you feel that he's winning five in a row? I'm sure you would have liked to have been in that position.
Well, see, we've sort of had a career that kind of copied each other in some ways. I won 650 or the international races at River Glade, which was the big race in the 60s and early 70s. I won six of those. We were similar, but to me, the big thing was when he got on that streak, I was still racing, and I wanted to end the damn streak. I'm sorry, he might be my kid, but I still wanted to beat him.
And besides the 97 race, were you two door handle close every time, or did he dominate almost every time?
He pretty well dominated every time. He had the ability. He had the natural feel. He had the talent. He had a lot of help. You know, he had a lot of good help with Henley and sponsors and Rolly McDonald and he grew up with me. He understood, by the time he got into a race car, he understood racing completely then. It's like Terry Clattenburg's son, Dean, Scott Kelly's, they grew up in it. And when they got into cars, they'd been around and heard so much about it, they just naturally did it.
So what did it mean to you to be able to race alongside Scott? I mean, it's great. It was great for me being a young hockey player playing with my dad, and now being on the racetrack. I can imagine maybe the same feeling.
Yeah, you know, like my oldest son said, we probably run each other harder than we've done anybody else on the racetrack. But no, it was good. I mean, it's hard to describe a race car driver, but I mean, when you're racing, he's just one more guy to beat. It really is, and it's like when the boys from down south come up and somebody say to me, you know, what's it like to run against these people? I said, it's just one more guy to beat on the racetrack. So when you're on a track, it's a whole different deal. But, you know, even when we were racing against each other, when something happened on the racetrack, I was always wondering if I wasn't in it, I was wondering if he was, you know.
And what did Scott think about Riverside racing there?
Same. He's the same. It is the track. It's probably, you know, one of the top three tracks in North America that I've ever run at. It's just fun to be at. It's a nice place to be. And, you know, with Donald and John when he was alive, and Donald, I mean, they're just top-rate guys. They're just nice people. They're good, and the family supports the racing. And you never, as I said, it's very hard to own a race track and race at it and not really agitate people and have problems. And both John and Donald have been able to do that, and they're the only people that I've run into in North America, and I've run into a lot of track owners that raced at their own tracks, and it never went good. I don't think anybody ever had any kind of a mean thought toward or had any doubt that everything went right, and racing at that racetrack, even though they were running at their own track, and that's got to be one of the hardest things that you could ever do.
So moving a little bit to 1970, I want to ask about this because I've actually looked through some old articles and through some of the old pictures of Riverside. Back in 1970, you suffered a pretty serious back injury. Was that a big wreck that happened maybe in a corner or on the front stretch?
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Number one turn, and it was, things were getting pretty heated up, and I remember Rolly McDonald was one of the guys involved. I think there was three of us in it, but I went up over the top of one of them and landed head first right into the bottom of the guardrail, which was concrete, and I did have a fractured vertebrae in my back.
So how long were you on the sidelines for?
The rest of that summer. That was probably in the middle of the summer, and I didn't race until the next year again.
So did you kind of slowly get back into it, or did you just take
No, just jump back in it.
Just jump right back in?
Yeah, actually, I might have... No, I don't think I did the rest of the year, but the next spring I hopped right in it again. Yeah.
You know, going from a pretty big wreck like that, were you a little nervous, perhaps? I know some people in different sports, if they get hurt once...
I thought about it for the first half a lap.
And then you got going.
And you got going, yeah.
And talking about John Chisholm and Donald Chisholm, you joined Nova Racing in 2006. What was that experience like?
I'll tell you how. Do you want to know how that happened?
Of course.
John used to... I went to see John one time to help us with a little sponsorship on a race car. And I went in to see him, and John asked me how much, and I told him. And he said, "You're the first guy that ever walked through that door that didn't want me to pay for the racing career. I don't usually sponsor race cars, but I will. Means you're, you know, I wasn't looking for the world. I just asked for a little and I got a little." So that went on for 2 or 3 years, and I go down to see him every spring. And I walked in this spring, sat at the office, and he said, I said, "I'm in to see you again about sponsorship." And he said, "Well, George," he said, I'm thinking of buying a race car for Donald. If I don't, I will help you out again." And I said, "I'll tell you something, John. If you guys buy a race car and you ever need a hand, I'm only a phone call away." So they did buy a race car and that, and I heard they were down there practicing. So a buddy and I, we drove down to see how they're making out. So I went in there, and things weren't going that well. They were just brand new at it. Nobody knew what they were doing. So I gave them a little advice. They had the tires on backwards. That was the first thing. Anyway, I helped them a little bit, and then we just got to be a little bit better friends, and then we were racing there one night, and I won the race, and Donald didn't run that well, and Donald said to me in the trailer, he said, "I think I had enough of this," and I said, "Donald, I will help you up." So I started helping him a little bit on the race car, and we got him going a little better, and we got to be really good friends after that, and that's how we got together.
And you've had numerous wins. You've won a championship, and as you mentioned, a Pinty's race. What did it mean to win that Pinty's race? Because they come around, the National Touring Series for NASCAR in Canada. That's a big moment right there.
It was. I think we set fast times that day, too, if I remember right. And it was a big win for my career, just being a crew chief, or, you know. And well, it's the whole team. Like, everybody works hard on the cars. It's just not myself.
What did it mean for you to be part of Donald's 2016 IWK 250 win?
Yeah, it was awesome. I can tell you a good story on that one, too.
Please do.
We tested there, I'm saying maybe on a Wednesday night before the 250, and Donald and I, we had both our cars. I was a little quicker than Donald that night, and I said to Donald, "You try my car." He said, "No, I'm not driving your car." And I said, "Well, you own it." I said, "You try it." "No, I'm not driving your car." He said, I said, "Get in and try it." He get in and tried my car, and he was bad to the bone. He was quicker than I was, and it was like we broke the track record that night. Unofficially, there was nobody there to see it. We seen it. We were there. We had the scoreboard on. Donald went so fast in my car, I said, "You got to drive my car." He said, "I'm not driving your car." So I said, "Yes, you are." So the boys and I went over. We peeled all the decals off of my car and peeled the decals off of his car. And we had a guy come and letter it. I changed the seats, and Donald drove my car for that 250.
Wow. That's incredible. Is that a well-known fact?
A lot of people do know about it. But it was all about wanting to win it for his dad.
Yes.
I think we had, I don't know how many seconds in that race. I seen Donald lead that race straight to the end. Fleming got us on a restart with two or three laps to go. We got bumped out of the way a couple of times leading, you know, near the end. And I think we lost a cylinder, and Donald came from the back and finished second in 7 cylinders. Like, we've just had so many stabs at it. It was like Dale Earnhardt trying to win the Daytona 500.
Just so many times and couldn't get it done, and you finally got it done.
Finally got it done. And I was so happy. Everybody was happy.
Standing here in Victory Lane after the IWK 250, Cassius Clark,
crossing the start-finish line first. What a win. What a dominating performance tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that was a goal all weekend. You know, with the troubles we went through last year, we had one goal, one agenda, and that was to come back and win. And, when we unloaded Thursday night, you know, we knew the car was good. We were fastest in practice and then in all the practices today. So we knew we had a pretty good hot rod and was able to get to the front there. And we wanted to dictate the pace of the race and try to have those guys chase us and burn some of their stuff up because we knew our car was so good on the long run. So we were able to execute that.
Did your heart flutter a little bit with the red flag with about, you know, nine to go?
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And we had a little trouble with the car bottoming out for a few laps on the restart there. And Jonathan's been on hot streak. So I haven't really raced much this year. This was my third or fourth race. And on the first time on these tires here, so I was hoping I wasn't going to be rusty, but we were able to pull through, and the car was just, you know, on rails, so when we got clear of him, we were able to pull away a little bit.
How special is it to win a race for Rolly McDonald?
Oh, awesome. I've been driving for Rolly since 2012. He got hurt in his dump truck and hired Andrew Hicken there to be his crew chief, and me and Andrew were good buddies when we lived down south together down in North Carolina, and he called me up, wanted to know if I'd want to run Rolly's cars, and I knew Rolly from when we were competitors against each other and knew it would be first class stuff, and been with him ever since.
See, money showed it. Cassius Clark winning the IWK 250. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
So it's after the IWK 250. Top 10 run for Kenny Wallace. He's eating a sandwich right now, trying to cool off here.
Lobster, baby.
It's lobster.
Yes.
How was the racing tonight? I know it's not a win, but it was a great day of racing.
Man, I'll tell you what, I had a blast. I mean, I truly did. We competed hard, we grinded it out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Got lifted in the rear a couple times, got sideways, everybody getting in each other. I think we finished eighth or ninth, got down a lap. My car was just tighter this year. I couldn't get the front end a turn, but hey, I had a blast, man. It was damn awesome.
Blast back here in the Maritimes.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, hey, I always tell the people, you know, the label that anybody wants is a racer, and I'm a racer. You know what I mean? It's not called winning. You don't go winning, you know. So, last time we run third, this time we run ninth. You know, we're raising money for the kids. And you know, what I'm at peace with, I just jump in a strange man's car, and I'm competitive, you know. So that's hard to do. So I'm pretty happy with that.
Any words to any fans that are listening that were at the IWK 250, anything you want to say to them?
I just want to thank all these fans for packing the grandstands every damn IWK 250. It's unbelievable. I mean, I don't think you fit another person in here. The racing was fantastic, so I just want to thank all the fans for showing up every year. There are racetracks all around the world that would envy this crowd, so thank you so much for showing up.
Top 10 for Kenny Wallace, and he's got a lobster sandwich to boot here. Wrapping up, Kenny, thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. You do good.
Jim, over the years of your involvement racing at Riverside as a promoter and the president of MASCAR and a helping hand with the Pro Stock Tour, what is your favorite memory at Riverside International Speedway?
You had to ask me that one. It's the one I won the 100 lapper there, and me and Frank Frazier had a little bit of a tussle, and after the race, he'd come down and have a little bit of a fight with us, and broke my trophy. That was in the 70s, yeah, just before I hung up my helmet.
Did you turn him in the wall or give him the bump and run? What happened there?
Well, it was a little bit of, he spun me out, and then when we came around there, I just give him a little brake check, and he went down underneath and broke his rad.
But you came out on top.
Well, I come out on top in the race and then on the bottom in the fight.
That's one way to put it. You were a young man when Riverside really started, when John got the idea. Did you hear grumblings about a big, giant track in the land in Antigonish?
Yeah, well, I knew the Chisholm family a little bit because I had the dump trucks back then and that. I started dump trucking in 64, too, so I was around working different areas, different places. Actually, when they built the speedway there, I was working in Cape Breton and Port Hawkesbury at an oil refinery with the dump trucks and going by there, you know, quite often and seeing the progress John was making. And we couldn't wait to get on it. That was like a Daytona to us, you know, coming off the flat little bull ring. So we'd never drove on a bank track like that. Even down in Maine, I was doing some racing down there and they're all flat tracks. So that was a big deal. That was probably the highlight of my career, you know, forever, I guess, really, to have a track like that built in our backyard. I mean, that was the mini Bristol of Canada, you know. So it was terrific to have John do that. It really brought racing alive around here.
And you were at the first race at Riverside?
I was, yes, and I don't know exactly where I finished, but I know I was there. I think I had a 65 Comet, I think I raced that year there. Yeah. Anyway, the Chevy motor in. I'm not much of a Ford motor fan, so I had a Chevy motor in it.
You go from a flat track like Fraser Mountain Raceway to Riverside. I mean, that's a night and day difference, right?
Oh, night and day, yeah. And, you know, there was a lot of figuring it out for our springs and everything. We certainly put heavier springs in it, but what I could remember about Riverside, like in the flat track, you slide around a lot and that, and we had big motors back then, believe it or not. We'd run bigger motors than we do today, and there was no tire rules, so we had big, wide, sticky tires on it, and it was fast. When it throws you into a corner, not so much on a flat track, but because the cars didn't handle all that great, even with the big tires, but you get the Riverside and you get all that fresh asphalt and that, and the bite is tremendous, and you roll into the corner there. And we were going darn near as fast, you know, when that place was built as we are today. We could run around there in 14.6, 14.7s, you know, and it was pretty quick back then, and they were just, we call them jalopies, I guess, compared to today.
Yeah, like I've chatted with Jim Hallahan before about the jalopy racing, and, you know, with all these great drivers racing the first times, were there any notable races for yourself in the early goings of Riverside?
I had a couple of bad wrecks there, I know that, and I won a lot of races there. I got a lot of trophies out in the shelf, but it's so long ago now, I'd have to go out and look and see what dates were on, I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah, and to, unfortunately, you know, dig up some of the bones about the wrecks, I had a chance to chat with Bobby Allen a few months ago, and he talked about his pretty nasty wreck in the late 70s and 77, and yourself was involved in that wreck. Is that a big memory for you?
Yeah, it was. I still remember that night because Bobby's car went right over the top of mine and landed up near the top of the rail, and Bobby hurt his back there or whatever. And no, that was pretty scary. I got turned going into turn one. I think it was Jimmy Hallahan got into my right rear, turned me around. We hit the wall, impact head on, and destroyed the front frame section of my car, but it bounced around. And turned facing the traffic, and Bobby was the next car to come up on top of me, and he rode right up over my car, right into the top of the rail. So I got out of it. Actually, I didn't get hurt other than shaken up, but Bobby got hurt in that accident.
Are there any notable races that at Riverside for you?
The one, I believe it was the 250 when we, I'm not sure. I think it was the 250, but we blew a motor early in the race, and we parked the car, and about 15, 20 minutes later, we decided to pull it back out and change the motor. And we got back out into the race, and we ended up gaining two or three spots by doing that. And we ended up winning the points championship that year by, you know, a couple of 3 points. And that was the reason why.
Wow. So if you would have just said, you know what, let's go home, pack it in, you wouldn't have been a champion.
Exactly.
How long did that take to completely change an engine out?
We were probably 45 minutes or so, maybe an hour.
And the pressure would be on as the laps are winding down, depending if there's cautions.
There was quite a few cautions, yeah, at the time. So, you know, we gained time there.
Because you're saving grace.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
When did you hear about the grumblings of the beginnings of Riverside International Speedway? A lot of drivers said they heard about John Chisholm getting the idea about building Riverside, meeting with Bill France. When did you hear about it, Junior?
Well, I used to work for Chisholm. I had dump trucks in Halifax, and I used to do a lot of work for them guys. And then when John started racing, I sort of helped him a little. And he bought a car from Holman and Moody, and we went to the first race in Anacondish, and it got rained out, and the track was brand new then, and nobody was ever on it. And it got rained out, and then we run the next weekend. It was beautiful. It was like going to Daytona compared to the racetrack down there.
Would have been your first time on a high-banked oval?
Yeah, yeah.
What was that like as a young driver?
It was nice. That track was nice then, and it's still nice, you know. Yeah, it was a copy. Me and John was pretty good friends, and when I first come to Ontario, I built a car for John, and we come up here and raced, and I stayed up on the weekends and worked on the car, and he flew up on the weekends and drove it. That's how come I come to Ontario. Next year, I come up here.
I just want to pedal back for a second. You were chatting about the Holman Moody car. I've heard a story about you meeting Bobby Allison. He was your hero. You sent a letter off to Hueytown, Alabama. Is that also where the connection came for John to get that car?
Yeah. Well, he bought a Holman and Moody car first, and he raced it some down around there, and then he wanted to go to Daytona and race on that. They had a road course at Daytona, and he took the car back to Holman and Moody's and had it all changed over for the road course. And anyway, he went down there, and he tried to get a license, and he couldn't get a license because he couldn't see. He had really thick glasses at that time,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't give him a license. So we talked to Bobby Allison. Bobby Allison drove the car and won the race.
Wow.
So Bobby said to John, I ain't giving you that car back. So he traded John Chevelle. So John got a brand-new Chevelle out of the deal, and then he raced it a while, and I ended up building them a car after that, and we were friends for a long time.
That's quite the trade-off there for a Bobby Allison car. He wins it, and then you get a brand new one.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to race against Bobby Allison?
Yeah, quite a few times. We were really good friends.
Down in the States, I assume?
I went down there one time and spent a couple of weeks and bought a bunch of. They were building some short track cars at that time. And went down there, spent a couple of weeks and got some parts, and I went home and built a car. So we were friends for a long time.
So with the 2015 IWK 250, before the race, the John W. Chisholm Memorial Cup was unveiled by the Chisholm family. Really a beautiful trophy that features the past winners of the 250 race. And you all received special silver plates presented before the race as well. And you were joined on stage by former 250 winners like Frank Fraser, Terry Clattenburg, Rolly McDonald, among many others. Did you really feel that you were part of an exclusive club at Riverside and the racing scene in the Maritimes?
Yeah, absolutely. To be on the same stage as all them guys that you mentioned and more is, it's an honor to stand there with them guys, that's for sure.
And with that race as well, it was a big battle with DJ Casey, and that's when you won your second 250 and that you were the first recipient of the John W. Chisholm Memorial Cup. How did that feel?
Beautiful. I mean, it was great to receive that and have my name on the trophy with all the rest of the guys was fantastic. Getting back to DJ, ran a clean race, and we ended up winning. That was great.
Was there a bit more pressure because that trophy was unveiled before the race?
Absolutely. You see that stuff, it's all part of the hype and the excitement of the race itself. Just something else you want to work for to get it and take it home.
And on top of that as well, with the Chisholm family, what did John Chisholm and the whole Chisholm family mean to you and your race team?
It means a lot. I remember we used to finish up the, instead of finishing in Halifax the way we normally do, we have done the last few years, or the last race of the year for a couple of years ended up at Riverside, and John O'Donnell would invite us back to their shop. We'd have some beers and pizza and wander around the shop and tell some lies and have some laughs. I mean, it was big. Like, Donald and I started the same year. He's been a great friend along the way and a great competitor.
Was it harder to get the first win or the second win 5 years later?
Harder to get the second win. I mean, the competition now, the kids and stuff coming up, it's getting tougher and tougher every year. So the second one was definitely, and it was kind of the same boat. We didn't have the fastest car all day. Car was good and consistent. We were in the right spot at the right time when we needed to be.
August 2006, a 200-lap race for the brand new, I'll say, Riverside. What was the festivities like leading up to it, and was there a lot of hype and glory with the reopening of the track?
Yes, there was. I mean, the place was absolutely packed. As far as how the opening ceremonies and stuff are today, I don't recall that being the case. I was probably just so immersed in trying to be faster as a driver and to get the car handling that the rest of that stuff honestly passed by. I was just so concerned with trying to get more speed out of the car. But certainly the bright lights, and you just had to look up, and I mean, the place was, they were sitting on the grass. It was incredible.
And that was your very first pro stock win, not only a win at Riverside, but your very first win coming at Riverside. What did that mean to you?
Oh, it meant a lot to me for sure. It's still my biggest win, but I think it meant even more to the team for sure. It was quite a process for them to come from where they did to see their car go back to victory lane. They worked so hard on it, and it was, words can't quite describe for our team and our group what it meant for everybody.
And along with that, what did it mean to win the first race at the new Riverside?
That's, like I say, it's still my biggest win, probably my most favorite win. Yeah, I was just looking at the picture the other night on my shelf of my garage of me and Wayne and George were on the podium, you know, standing there with John, getting our trophies and having a laugh. And it was quite a night to remember. I still remember a lot of the race. I think something happened to Wayne early and he got down, and then battling with George on the final restart with, you know, 30 some laps to go, and Frank coming over the radio and, you know, telling me, you know, pumping me up verbally, telling me that's why they had me in the car, and coaching me, and to win it was, you know, you can't put words to it.
A big thank you to all the drivers who shared their stories this year on Victory Laps, and also another thank you to all the guests I've featured. If you would like to check out any of the previous episodes, they're online at riversidespeedway.ca. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of the show. I'm supposed to be chatting with the original voice of Riverside, the one and only Jerry Lawrence, but I can't seem to get in. Wait a minute. Did you just hear a thump from above? Wait a minute, is that Jerry Lawrence or Santa Claus we're talking to? How's it going, Bear?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How's getting up to the holiday season treating you and your family?
Well, we're doing great. We've got our Christmas trees up. We've got the deck all decorated, and we're just waiting for Santa to come and deliver all his presents. I've been a good boy, by the way, all year, so no reason why I shouldn't get something.
Maybe some tickets to the IWK 250 next year?
Who knows? You never know.
So what did you think of the 2019 season, Jerry? We saw you at the track a couple of times. We saw you at the Show and Shine. What did you think of the 2019 racing season for the 50th anniversary of the track?
Oh, I think it was better than expectations. I mean, it was, I think, over the top. It was just unbelievable. One of the big things, of course, when I started there in 1969, after a call from John Chisholm, lasted until the last time I was there a couple of years ago, 50 years went by so fast. It was just unbelievable. And I think back to the old Drake City track in Sackville, and I suppose Riverside, too, when guys like Rolly McDonald and these guys, Joey Baker, a lot of them brought their cars to the track in dump trucks. And at the track, they built a platform so they could just back up to the platform, tip the body up a bit, and slide the car off, you know. And now, of course, they've got multi-million-dollar haulers and all that kind of thing. But a lot of water under the bridge in 50 years for stock car racing.
Yeah, and we even brought some of the older cars out for the Show and Shine that we ran. What did you think of the Rev It Up at Riverside Show and Shine?
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Brought back certainly a lot of memories for me. I've always been interested in cars anyway. My dad had a 36 Chev. I remember that one, and they had a 41 Ford. And he had a 49 Meteor, and we used to go to the U.S. in the summertime with the Meteor, and the Americans used to go all around it and look at it. It was just a Ford, you know, but they'd never seen a Meteor before. And my dad and I, in 1952, I really became hooked on racing then. We used to go to the Sackville Raceway here in Sackville, Nova Scotia. And we used to have a great time on Saturday afternoons. And the old junkers that they ran, Vic Hilchey and all these guys, Bob McDonald years ago, it was just something that I got hooked on, and certainly my dad liked the racing too.
And this year as well, we saw that 134 Ford modified on track. That's your son, Patty's. We saw Frank Fraser hop in it during the IWK 250 weekend. That was really special to see that car on track and hear how loud that thing is.
Oh, look, we just couldn't believe how Frank did that. I mean, it was awesome. Patty, of course, he's a little more tenderly with something like that, but Frank just bled it all out on the track and did a great job. The car is an awesome little car. And of course, Patty is the leader of this new series that they're going to have, the Hot Rod Classics, and a lot of interest in it. And I hope they get together and have 10 or a dozen of those cars ready to run for the summer, because I think it will bring a big crowd, because a lot of the older racers look for this stuff, you know.
Well, what does that mean to you, Jerry, as someone who's been involved in motorsports for a long, long time, to see cars like this back racing next year? And we're going to see him on the high banks of Riverside, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just brings back so many memories. I was just telling my wife tonight, Sheila, that I remember where the post office is now in Halifax. That used to be a racetrack, a horse racing track, but also it was a automobile thrill show that used to come in, and they would be right in front of the grandstand. It was called the Hollywood Daredevils, and I remember Buttercup Nelson. I remember a guy by the name of Young. He was one of the big guys, and that whole area that's the post office now used to be, there was army huts, and I can remember my dad and I going to see the show. And one of the cars would have been a 50 or 51 Ford, went right through the end of one, right through the end of one of these houses, and they didn't have it there the next year, by the way.
I guess not. That's quite the demolition.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, my interest in cars goes way, way back, and Sheila too. I mean, my wife, we've traveled so many places and seen so many races, all down through the eastern U.S. into Florida. And we just enjoy it every time we go.
And you were also featured on the little screen this year. Motoring TV was at Riverside to cover the anniversary, and they featured a little bit of Jer Bear. So you were on TSN this summer.
Yeah, that was quite a thrill. When we got there, he said, you know, are you ready to go? And I said, go? What do you mean go? He said, I'm gonna do a bit here with you on TV. And I said, well, Let it rip.
Did you have time to throw your makeup on?
Yeah, no makeup. When you, I just turned 80 the middle of July, and I can't believe that I've survived this long, and still interest in cars, and I just, you know, I've had a very, very full life, and with a wife that I have, it's certainly been unbelievable, you know, and the three boys, they've completed the whole thing.
So what can we expect, and where can we expect to see Jer Bear in 2020? Are you going to make it out to the track a lot to see the Hot Rod Classics?
Oh, yeah, we'll follow the Hot Rod Classic where we can. You know, it's just not as easy as it used to be, and I, you know, Sheila has stuff that she wants to do. She's high into antiques and stuff, including me. So we'll fit the racing in between the other weekends, and we have a little convertible. We have a 99 Chrysler Sebring convertible that we use on the highway, and we'll be driving that around. So we'll go to a few car shows, and certainly the stock car races, no doubt about that. By the way, I'd like to congratulate you on the job that you did this year in fulfilling the dreams that Joan Rui and Peter and Patty and everybody who were involved in racing, the job that you did. I thought you brought the stock car racing forward very much in the last few months of the season. So congratulations to you. I think you're doing a great job. And no, you don't have to pay me or anything for saying that. So, you know.
Well, I was gonna put you on the nice list with Santa, but you already said you were already on there. But I appreciate it. There was big shoes to fill with you being the first announcer at Riverside, and appreciate you hopping on here to have a little chat before Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you and your family, and hopefully you get all the gifts that you wanted. What kind of cookies are you gonna leave Santa?
Well, there's somebody here who wants to say something. Oh, my goodness gracious,
Santa.
I want to say hi to all the people at Riverside and all the stock car racers. Oh, good night, everybody. A good day, and have a great year next year with all your racing.
Before we wrap things up, I've got some details to pass along about the 2020 season at Riverside. We hope to have our schedule finalized early in the new year. The NASCAR Pinty Series will not be at Riverside in 2020, so we're looking at our first significant schedule change since 2007. Stay tuned to our website, social media, and your email over the offseason for all the latest news. We already know that the 2020 IWK 250 Super Race weekend is July 16th through the 18th, and we are going to be starting 2020 IWK 250 campsite renewals and reservations in January. The process will be the same as the previous years, where 2019 site holders will have first chance to renew their site as long as they do it before the renewal deadline, which will be announced soon. Once renewals are filled, then we're going to start on new reservations in the order they were received. We're going to send out a newsletter with the on-sale date and more details, but if you don't see it by the end of January, check out riversidespeedway.ca for more details. We will also not be mailing out renewal offers. It'll all be done electronically online. Well, 2019 has been an amazing year as we celebrated our 50th anniversary with you, our fans who continue to support Riverside International Speedway year after year and decade after decade. It was my first year working here at Riverside. It was incredible being able to announce at this beautiful facility and also doing victory laps and chatting with all these great drivers and great people who had a hand in making history here at Riverside. And it was a year-long celebration, starting with Throwback Thursday back in January with victory laps and special RIS 50 merchandise, which looked incredible. At the track, we saw some amazing celebrations. We officially opened the year with town crier James Stewart at the Triple 50s presented by Kaylee Honda. And during the IWK 250 weekend, we had a special RIS 50 video backdrop behind Matt Minglewood at the tailgate party. We had the annual Rev It Up at Riverside Show and Shine with the NASCAR Pinty Series weekend, and then the grand finale fireworks at the Lucas Oil 150. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for supporting Riverside International Speedway, and a big thank you as well to all the drivers who put on excellent racing every single time we were here in 2019, whether it was Pro Stocks, Legends, Sportsmen, Hondas, it didn't matter, whatever was on track, we were entertained. Thank you for all the man hours and manpower you put in those cars to make sure they revved beautifully around Riverside. I also want to thank everyone who works hard at Riverside, whether it was in the ticket booth or the canteen or on the track. Without you, all this would not be possible. I also want to take this time to specifically thank Joan Rui and Peter Lawrence for everything they've done for the 50th anniversary. They put in a lot of hours this year. Also want to thank General Manager Paul McLean for everything he's done and the Chisholm family for everything they've done for racing here in the Maritimes. The checkered flag is waving. I'm Dylan Langille. Thank you very much for listening to Victory Laps, and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you and your family. We've got some big things up our sleeve for next year, so make sure to give us a like in our social media accounts, subscribe to the newsletter, and check out riversidespeedway.ca to see what we've got lined up for 2020. This has been Victory Laps, part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway.